place for August 27th. This is Great Biblical Personalities. You see the source number one from Tana Debei Eliyahu. The underlying portion says, Lefichach hayiti omer, shekol echod ve'echod miYisrael chayav lomar matai yagi'u ma'asai lema'ase avotai Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov. Everyone has to say, when will I start to behave like Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov? You can find this chuveret on yu.edu. In my course. Tana Debei Eliyahu in Perek Chof Hei says that the Avos are meant to be emulated, so if I'm going to explain their deeds, I'm probably going to explain them as good as possible. I don't want to emulate bad deeds. Right? I finally make my way to Israel, and I see that there's a drought, or it's inhospitable conditions. Am I going to get up and leave right away? Well, that's what Abraham did. Maybe if Abraham stuck it out and said, God wouldn't tell me to come here to die. I'm staying here. I'm not leaving. Maybe Yaakov wouldn't have left either. Right, this is all source number two, which is Rabbi Pinchas b'shem Rabbi Hoshaya Rabba Amar Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Avram Avinu, that Aleph Aleph means Avram Avinu. Say uchavosh es aderech lifnei vanecha. Go out and forge a path before your sons, which means maaseh avosim al banim. Act in a certain way which shows that you're aware of the fact that everything you do is symbolic of what your children will do. Okay? Your children will act in the same way.
To God tell him to, when he said go to the land, I tell him to like really live there, because Avram got there to where God said to go, and then he sort of just used his seichel and said, well, there's no fruit here, but I got to this land, and maybe I should go somewhere that I can, have it figured out, and then come back. It wasn't like he's like, oh, this place is horrible, and then come back, you know, but he went, he just needed to use that seichel to survive in that land and stuff.
So, see, this is the beauty of the study of Torah, is that Rashi reads it one way, Rabban reads it another way. Rashi said that Abraham was tested, and he passed the test, because he left without complaining. Rabban says he was tested, and he failed the test, because he left. And Rashi says, you know, Rabban, what do you want? Eat some Canaan ace. You know, you go 2 weeks without eating, and see how that feels before you're so quick to judge a man who doesn't want his whole household to starve to death.
Right. Also, I feel that it's hard for Abraham to really, you know, if you want to say, oh, Abraham should just have faith and stay there, then like, it's hard to say, because this whole God, you know, God talking to him and think this is new, that there's this presence of God, so he doesn't really know sort of have the faith. So he had faith going. Because it's like, oh, okay, I'll just travel to this place. And then when he gets into his family, he's like, well, now, I'm not quite sure what to do. I don't know if I really should follow, you know, whatever. So he was disabled, but then as he saw, I think, that God really was saving him, that he then really put his faith in God. Because, you know, even with the whole, you know, he had to hide Sarah and stuff like that. He could have had faith. He got a little protected from Sarah. Sarah is such a...
push comes to shove, God does protect him in the end.
Right, so God does, but he still, you know, hides her and stuff just in case. And then once he sees that she comes back and he's rewarded, he then really...
See, Yaakov is teaching us about a combination of ishtablos, personal ishtablos, and faith. Right? Without both, he might not have survived that. Right? So they say he's supposed to have ishtablos as if you have no faith, and have faith as if you have no ishtablos. You know, but you see, Abraham goes to strategize how to survive this thing, and at the same time, he's taught that he is dependent on God for his survival. Right? You know, the Bible doesn't tell us what it was like for Abraham to experience some of that famine. It just says, "Vayira ol ba'aretz." What's the next word in the Torah? "Vayered Abraham Mitzrayim." Not "Vayira ol ba'aretz." And Avram got his Hillel group together, and he called and he said, let's daven Maariv and stick around in heaven and daven. And right? It doesn't say that he sat and had let's have a marathon learning and see if we can get God's graces and give us some rain. It just says, play with Avraham Yitzchak. That might have led Ramban to say, come on, give it a try at least. You know, it's all ishtablus in your eyes? You know.
I feel like Hashem kind of encouraged Avraham to go down to Mitzrayim with the bris of Hamsar, which he prophesied that he would go down and that he would return and become a great nation. So it's kind of I know, but it's still kind of encouraging. He's showing him that he kind of did the right thing, and now we're going to go from here. He didn't rebuke him. He didn't say this is the right thing. He said, now that he went down, let's move forward. And in a way, that kind of like reassured Avraham that possibly he did the right thing.
Yeah, okay. Good. You're reading that Rashi. Ban says that the whole story in Egypt was not because of the mistreatment of Yosef, but because the mistreatment of Yosef was a means whereby God would give the historical response to Abraham so readily leaving right after Hashem told him to get there, which is the time that your grandson will go down to Egypt. I mean, after all, if Yaakov was satisfied getting food from this landlord down in Egypt, who was misbehaving and holding on to Shimon and threatening Binyamin, now that he knows that that guy is Yosef, it's a kol chomer you should just send back for food. Once a month, he's going to send you food from Egypt. Right? They said, why did you have to go down? God told him to. You know, why did you have to go to Egypt? Let Yosef come up and see you. Right? No, because Zadie went down, so why shouldn't I go down? Right? My grandfather went down in time. And Yitzchak also wanted to go down in time of famine. And there Hashem tells him not to. Dafka not to. Why didn't Hashem tell Yaakov, don't go down? It was a bad idea for your father and it's bad for you.
That's the point. The fact that Hashem specifically told Yitzchak not to go down, not Avraham, points to the fact that Avraham's not to blame entirely for going down.
I tend to agree with you on this. You know, I think I'm more of the... I read Bereishis more that the reason why we went to Egypt was because of the mistreatment of Yosef, more than Amram. Although there are Gemaras that weigh in on this, and certainly Mefarshim that weigh in on this. Yeah, it's good. Totally. Okay, number three on page one. So this is like a... we touched upon this last class, like a justification of deeds. There's a book called Chayavim B'Mikra V'Zakoim B'Talmud U'V'Midrashim. They appear guilty in the text, but absolved in the Talmud and the Midrash. There's another thing called... this is an interesting thing. I'll just get off on a slight tangent on this number two. Levi Smolar, Studies in Targum Jonathan. You see it? This is a relatively recent book. And then my master's thesis, Rabbinic Reflection of Violation of Torah Law in the books of Joshua, Judges, and Samuel. Right? That's on your front page. Right? These are the characters mentioned in the Gemara. Ruvain, Ben Eli, Ben Shmuel, David, and Shlomo. Right? Targum Yonasan, just want to show you that what this penchant of the rabbis to clear up and to justify, to make Zakai, that which looks chayav, right? Is as old as the Tanakh itself. I want to give you two or three examples of this. The infraction doesn't really matter. Infractions are small things. It's the fact that the Bible cares to report the infraction in a different way. In Divrei Yamim, you all know what Divrei Yamim is, right? Remember that we repeat of earlier narratives. And I use two examples. One that says that when Shaul's body was taken off of the wall of Beit Sha'an by the people of Yabesh Gilead, it says in Shmuel that they took down the bodies and burnt them. They burnt the bodies. And then took the bones to Eben Shaul and buried them in Shaul's family plot. It says they burnt the bodies. The Doc writes because they had been decomposed to such a great extent that it was so diseased, it was awful. A decomposed body after 1 or 2 days is awful. This is weeks and months. So they have to burn the flesh that remained, and then they carried the bones to Eben Shaul. The problem with that is that burning flesh is, they should have put it in a sack and take it down to the family, bury whatever you have. You know, the halacha is that if someone dies in the hospital, you take everything, have to be buried in the sheet of So kalchomer, whatever left is on the body, right? So what's interesting is that in Divrei Hayomim, when it repeats this, it says the people of Yavesh Gilad took down the bodies, and it changes the word, they burnt them. It says they made a burning for them. Are you familiar with the custom? Mark Sinai in the second parable talks about the custom in the ancient times of making a burning for a king. They had to burn his body. They would burn some of his special effects so no one uses them but him. They would burn his saddle, they would burn some, like his cushion, things that he used that no one, even his own son, should use. So they made a burning for him, burn things as a sign of respect. Right? Yirmiyahu speaks against Yehoyakim. He says, people hate you so much they'll never make a burning for you. Do you see what I'm saying? So they burnt the bodies, and Shmuel becomes, they made a burning for him in Divrei Yom. You see, Divrei Yom, what were they? Pulling the wool over our eyes? Were they lying? I'm not going to get into that now, but what they're doing is that they are rendering a reading, a rendition of what happened in a way that clears it up, that cleanses it, so to say. That's okay. That happens a lot in Divrei Yom. The Chiddush is that you've heard of Targum Yom HaSan, right? Aramaic of Nevi. Yonglus to the Torah is Yom HaSan, Targum Yom HaSan to Nevi. The Targum Yom HaSan to the Shmuel Pasuk is the Aramaic of the Divrei Yom Pasuk. You get it? Targum Yom HaSan saw, how were they burning bodies? So Targum Yom HaSan didn't translate into Aramaic the Shmuel Pasuk that says they burned bodies. He translated into Aramaic the Divrei Yom Pasuk that said they made a burning for him. Again, it's a minor infraction. I'll give one other example. It says in Shmuel that David wore an ephod bat when he was dancing with the Aron as he was being brought back to Yerushalayim. It's after a parsha Shmini. David was dancing wearing an ephod bat. Problem? What's the problem? Ephod bat is the Kohen Gadol's garment. It said Parshas Tetzaveh. What's David non-Kohen doing wearing a Kohen Gadol's garment? Ephod bat is what Eviatar Torah uses to ask the Rav Atumim. So how is David wearing a Kohen Gadol's garment? So in Divrei Yomim, the Aramaic, in Divrei Yomim, it says David was wearing a Me'il boots. Me'il boots. A linen coat. Fine. You want to say it? The ephod bat in Shmuel is translated in meal boots in Divrei Yom. It's rendered Divrei Yom, meal boots. The Targum Yom HaSan to David wearing a ephod bat in Shmuel is kardut de boots, which means a linen coat. So you see that the Targum Yom HaSan is bothered by the fact that David is wearing a Kohen Gadol garb. And translates the Kohen Gadol garb the way Divrei Yom HaSan changed it. See, but what do we see here, though? We see that this penchant is as old as Targum Yom HaSan, which is older than all the Midrashim, but it's as old as the Tanakh. Divrei Yom HaSan sees a pasuk that looks problematic. It will render it in a way that resolves the problem. Okay. So here we have these five characters. We see Reuven, Bnei Eli, Bnei Shmuel, David, and Shlomo. And then the page 2, 3, and 4, I'm going to review. The review of it is on page 4, the top. The review of the resolutions of what they did is either the act as we understand it is not done, something more subtle took place. Reuven did not sleep. This is what we spent most of the time in the first class. Reuven did not sleep with Bilhah. See it? Lo shochav. Bilbel yitzu'ei aviv. He didn't actually sleep with Bilhah. He just moved a bed from one room to another. Remember how I presented that to you? That Chazal were not interested as much as what happened, as much as they were interested in what his motivation was. So they're willing to give Reuven a pass on sleeping with his father's wife since his intentions were honorable. You, you're giving the right message here, rabbis? I mean, but you know what? Everybody who learns this story, whether you're in third grade reading Parshas Vayishlach, you're an adult, you read it on your level. The Gemara is just saying is that even if he did sleep with her, it doesn't mean that I'm looking away from it. Reuven was punished sorely at the end of his life for this. He lost his Bechorah because of it. But that his intention is honorable. He just always goes about it the wrong way. And that's our picture of Reuven. We talked about that last class with the Book of Jubilees and the Apocrypha and the Testament of the 12 tribes. That he wants to save Yosef, but he just can't do it. He just can't go over the top. So that's what people reading this. Are you a Reuven type? Do you always have good intentions, but somehow something keeps you from taking it to the bank? All right, here's where you take charge. Right? Recognize yourself. Once you recognize yourself, that's halfway to fixing things. Reuven says, take my two sons and kill them if I don't bring Binyamin back. Really? How is that going to make things better, says Yaakov. Who does Yaakov trust? He trusts Yehuda. How was Yehuda able to convince, you know what I'm talking about, right? To let me take Binyamin to get more food. He says, listen, Dad, I am not as sure as my older brother, Reuven, that I'm going to bring Binyamin back. I'm not as sure as he is. I can't make a promise that he's ready to. But I'll tell you what I have experienced. I've lost two children. I've lost two children. Aaron only. I will not let you lose two children. Lost one, I will not let you lose the second. Just trust me. Let me take him, get more food, and we'll bring him right back. That's why Yehuda stands up for him in Parshas Vayigash. So that's more convincing. But Reuven, not so much. He's too convincing! Reminds me of Ibn Ezra, where he says, you know when you can tell someone's lying? When they say, I swear to God. That's a liar. Anyone who swears to God and doesn't, that's a liar. You ever say that? No, I never say I swear to God. I never say it. I would never think of saying it. Someone says swear to God, that's a liar. He's such a liar, he thinks the only way that you're going to believe him is if he swears to God. Right? So when Reuven is trying so hard to make his father trust him that he's going to bring back Binyamin, as to say, kill my two children if I don't, that's how sure I am that I'm bringing him back, he didn't give this enough thought. Alright? So that's Reuven. Now, the Bnei Eli, it's very interesting. Bnei Eli seems to be doing the same thing. The Gemara says, at the beginning of Yuma also, first parish in Yuma, that they didn't really sleep with the women. What did they do? Manu kinei noshim. After a woman gave birth, she has to bring a korban. And then she goes just to bring the korban to the Ohel Moed, and then she goes back home to her husband. Right? So by the Kohanim being less than enthusiastic about fulfilling this need, they just, you know, they took their time. So the women were kept away from their husbands longer. You see, it's the same thing as Reuven. Preventing someone from sleeping with his wife is like raping that wife. You see, it's similar. The Bnei Eli, by keeping the women from living with their husbands, it's as if they slept with the women. But they're consistent in terms of the way they're darshan. The Bnei Shmuel didn't really steal, they didn't really take bribes. They just weren't as forthgoing with their mishpat as their father Shmuel was. Okay. Now, remember what I think I told you yesterday, Tuesday? Why didn't the rabbis say something like this about David? He didn't really sleep with her. He asked her to move into the palace and living with the king. Is it?
Because she was
pregnant. You can't say that here. She says she's pregnant.
Right.
So you have to, instead of changing what happened, what are you changing? The circumstances. She wasn't a married woman, she was et cetera, right? Okay. We'll be doing that inside, Shmuel Beis, when we get to it. Right? So we'd say the act was done, but explained away through circumstance. You see it? He didn't sleep with a married woman, he didn't really kill Uriah without cause. Gemara mentions that she was she was a divorced woman at the time, and he rebelled against the king. So the Gemara uses these explained circumstance. In Shlomo's case, they just say, wow, the act wasn't done at all. He simply didn't do the things written in the Tanakh.
How's it possible that you just say that you didn't do anything that's what it's like, yeah, it was all just...
Yeah, it's hard to know that's what they do. They just say, Shlomo didn't do those things, his wives did it. Because he let them, it's written as if though he did it. Okay? Take a look at the top of five. Chazal noted that the Avos Imos suffered through difficult times. Not all these difficulties are explained as corrective messages. For instance, the barrenness of the Imahos is because Hashem wants to hear the prayers of Tzaddikim. Or the Ra'av to Avram in Perakit Beis is because Hashem wants to test Tzaddikim. But now let's see a list of questionable deeds. Right? This source, number 6, says, notice the two opinions. For goodness sakes, give Kadavim a little slack. Look at the two opinions. It says, see right here, source number 6. Okay. It says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ka'as Hayola Avinu Avram, B'shar Shapiresh Lot Ben Ophir Me'imam. When Lot, remember that the shepherds fought together, right? When Lot separated from Avram, God got angry with him. Why? Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu. Lakol hu medabek, ulelot achiv eino medabek. Avram is getting Bali Tshuva all over the world, but his own nephew, he can't makarev. By the way, that is eminently true. People who are able to makarev the whole world, their own sibling is from, because you can't do with family. But they didn't stop the anger from coming down on them. Okay? Alright? Rabbi Nechemya Omar, listen to what this guy writes. Ka'as hayola kadosh baruch hu, v'shor asher mahalich lo kim Avram Avinu. God was angry with Avraham when Lot came with him. Amar kadosh baruch hu, ani amarti lo, l'zaracho nosati es ha'aretz hazos. I said I'm giving this land to your children. Lot is not your child, it's your brother's child. And you are bringing in Lot. You're bringing in Lot to the Hishab Yarshim here?
This is angry at Avram.
He's angry at Avram for trying to makarv Lot, and the first guy was angry with Avram for not makarving Lot. Come on, cut this guy a little slack. On this second one, I believe probably. You say, don't makarv someone. Everybody deserves keeper. I'll tell you another reason why I don't like that Beirush. Because he's saying you're bringing Lot to Yarshim here. The one time Avram complained about not having a child of his own, and I think this, because of what I'm about to tell you, is why the rabbis don't like Lot. He doesn't seem like such a bad guy. Why do the rabbis, they destroy him. Everything he does is negative. Because, you know, your uncle is Avraham, and not once, but twice, you choose to live away from him. Where was the second time? It says, they separated. Lot looked at, oh, look at that area there. That's a beautiful area. It's like the garden of God. It's like the land of Egypt. You see, Avram went to Egypt and left a very wealthy man. And it says Lot was wealthy also. Right? You know, Lot was Sarah's brother, right? Rashi quotes the Maamar Chazal that Haran had a daughter named Yiska. And Yiska in Aramaic is the same as Sarah in Hebrew, princess. So it's not such a flight to say that Sarah was Avram's niece. It's very common in that time to marry your brother's daughter. Right? Your older brother's daughter. So, if that's the case, think of this. This explains a very interesting Rashi. When it says that Lot also left Egypt very wealthy, Rashi writes, because he didn't inform Paro that Avram was really Sarah's husband. Does that bother you? that Lot should get credit for not informing Paro that Avram and Sarah were really husband and wife and not brother and sister? Why should it bother you?
Well, didn't Lot, like, leave? Like, he didn't go into Mitzrayim with them. He sort of was, like, doing his own thing. I heard somewhere. He, like, he wasn't with them. Like, went out.
No, because it says he came out with wealth. It seems that he's there with them. Rashi says Lot could have told Paro he's lying, he's really the husband. And because he didn't say that, he's rewarded. What's your philosophical or what's your problem with that? One thing. Why should we reward a person for not doing something that, if he had done it, would have been horribly despicable and disgusting?
Right, unless you look at like the school bully who gets rewarded for not bullying someone. It's like a negative.
Yeah, but that's not the way things should be.
Ideally. But certain circumstances lends.
I'm not going to reward for someone for not behaving like an absolute disgusting, despicable pig.
Unless that person is an absolutely disgusting, despicable pig, in which case you're trying to learn about that behavior.
Right. Okay, well, I'm still going to give an answer. Is that Lot and is really Esau's brother? Yet, hey, what's he getting all these gifts and riches for saying he's the brother when he's not? I'm the brother! I should be getting all those riches. You get it? So, alright, so maybe there was something in it for him to say it. So he gets credit for not. You get it? You know what I'm saying? Not just being roguish, but he is the brother. Okay, good, fine. But don't you see that Lot got so enamored with Egypt that when the shepherds are fighting, he turns his eyes towards stone. He says, that's Gigan Hashem, Keretz Mitzrayim, which it says in the Torah, right? So he chose to get back to Egypt any which way he could. He was taken, but he couldn't get out.
I'm not sure what the significance of this is, but it seems oddly reminiscent of the time when Reuben went with us and Menashe saw the land that they were in, also kind of
was to it.
But I'm not sure I can draw a comparison in terms of...
It's something that it has to do with you know, the Tziv asks, if Reuven and Gad had not asked for that land, what would have happened to it? I mean, they conquered it from Sihon and Og. What would have happened to it? They would have just left it behind? Because they helped conquer it also. But no, the Tziv says, Pasher, it would have been divided amongst all 12 tribes. Instead, Reuven and Gad got everything they got from there, and the 12 tribes got a bigger portion in Israel because they didn't have to share it with Reuven and Gad. Okay, so fine. But let's get back to this point. Is that Lot wants to get back to Egypt, and right away he's reminded, you're in the wrong place, Lot. He's taken captive, right, in chapter 14. And Avram saves him. What happened then with Lot?
He
went back.
Yeah.
How do you know he went back?
Because later on,
that's where he is. So not once, but twice. And when Avram says in chapter 15, twice Lot leaves Avram, and Avram says, God, you keep telling me great nation, but how can I be a great nation if I have no children? And he says, someone is inheriting me. Who is that? Yeah, he says, well, you know, God, how my son is supposed to inherit from me, but I don't have a son. He says, Ben Meshech Beisi. Damesek Eliezer. He says, Eliezer, my butler, is inheriting me. Right? So don't you see that that's an implicit, I think explicit, rejection of Lot? You don't say your butler is inheriting you when you have a nephew. Right? So that's why I prefer the first page, the first book of this, source number 6. You know what I'm saying? Avram, why couldn't you makar him? Why did you have to leave? This is a rarity for Shas. Most such statements are found in Bereshis Rabba. Amar Rabbi Avahu, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Elazar. Neman ne'enash Avram Avinu. V'nishtabdu banov l'mitzrayim osayim v'esur shanim. Why was Avram punished that his descendants should be in Egypt for 210 years? So the Gemara says, Mipnesha osa angaria b'tamidi chachonim. Shnemar v'yorek eschanichav yelitei beiso. This seems to be a polemic against students going to the army. You see? Because he took, I mean, this stands in contrast with the Gemara that says that he didn't take 318 people with him. He just took Eliezer, that's Gematria 318. Just an interesting... You're familiar with the Rashi, right? That it says in Perek Yudalot that to save Lot, he took 318 men with him, and they saved Lot. Rashi writes, he didn't take 318, he just took Eliezer. Our Gemara is here saying that he, because he took those 318 men from the base Medrash, kind of base Medrash today, but he took them from the base Medrash, that's why his descendants had to be slaves. Sounds like a polemic that the author of this statement is against students going to fight in the army. But Rashi, what about, you know, Rashi says that he didn't take 318, it was just Eliezer. Because the amazing coincidence that the only person we can name by name has the Gematria 318. What a coincidence. But it's more than that. There's no such number in the Torah like 318. What's the normal way the Torah would write a number like that? 300. The Torah rounds off. The Torah doesn't mention numbers like that. Why did the Torah say, three, really? 318 men? 318? Whoever would you see a number like that? Even the numbers later in Bamidbar, they say tribes of 54,500. Really? Not 54,517? So we round off numbers. We get rid of two, one and two or even three zeros sometimes. And now you're telling me 318? It must be that the Torah wants to tell me something. That's what when Rashi darshens. It's always something difficult like that. Okay. So that's one reason why his descendants were enslaved, because he took people out of the base medrash to fight. Shmuel Amar mitnei shehifriz al midosav shel Kadosh Baruch Hu shenemar b'ma'idak yirashenu. When he said, God, how will I know that I'll get all the promises you're making? So the Gemara here says that's a breach in faith, Abraham. Sorry. Rashi again tries to clear it up. Rashi says, he wasn't saying, God, how do I know that what you're telling me will be true? That's a breach in faith. God, because I said so. Instead, what Abraham meant was, how do I know that I'll deserve it? How do I know that I'll merit what you're telling me? Right? Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Shehifrish Bnei Adam Likonei Sachas Kampi Ashkinu. Rabbi Yochanan here seems to be like the second opinion. I'm sorry, the first opinion. That he wasn't makariv enough people. Difficult piece of Gemara. Look at source number 8. I'm going through Sefer Bereishis right now. Look at source number 8. Source number 8 is from a medrash called Medrash HaGadol. It's on Chamisha from Shetorah. And the medrash says that Avram is to be blamed. See what I wrote on the side? This medrash finds fault with Avram for so quickly agreeing to take Hagar. Wow. You should have objected to take Hagar. Because you agreed so quickly, look what happened. Look what kind of child she gave birth to. Wow. Look at page 6. Medrash Tanchuma finds fault with Avraham for having Ishmael, and finds fault with Yitzchak for having Esav. Is it true that every parent is at fault for having any child that goes off the derech? Well, the author of this marriage obviously feels so. Says that any child who goes off the derech is parent as at fault. Gemara is called your children come out, needs mazel. And here, this Medrash Tanchuma is finding fault with Avraham for having Ishmael and Yitzchak for having Esav.
Well, it's like nature versus nurture type of thing.
Right. So that's how Midrashim work. This Medrash is saying that I'm taking more. Well, it could be that the parent didn't discipline well enough, or things like that. Right?
How could they even put the same category up? Shmuel came from Hagar, who was a choice of Abraham. That was independent of Yitzchak, whereas Yitzchak and Esav were, you know, they came as a group.
I imagine it'll take very different.
Hagar also was like during the country.
Right, but I think that you know Ishmael already manifests behavior in Avram's house that got him kicked out in the first place.
So, Avram, you're blamed.
How can you have a child grow up in your house who's behaving that way? She hits her the Tarbus Rabba. Look at the next one. This is amazing. Next one is Gracious Rabba. Okay. The one about Yitzchak not disciplining Esav is in source 12. But and it goes on to others about Avshalom and Eliyahu and others that David didn't rebuke. But we, what's the traditional way that we translate this? The Elokim Niso es Avraham. What's Niso mean? This is the beginning of the Akedah Yitzchak story. The Elokim Niso es Avraham. What's a Niso?
Like appeared? No.
Ben-Ezra suggested to possibly be uplifted.
They want to
remove from the philosophical problem of what it clearly means is tested. Does Hashem have to test anybody? I might have to test you to know what grade is being. But does Hashem have to test anybody? He knows what we're going to do. Okay, so this Medrash wants to say that it means he put to the test, which means that he punished. Avram deserved the punishment of the Akedah. The Akedah was a punishment.
Why is the test considered a punishment? Why do you jump to that conclusion?
Let's read the Medrash. Medrash says that right before Akedah Yitzchak, because Akedah Yitzchak starts by Yacharim Ba'ila, which usually connects it to the previous story. Right before Avram set up 7 sheep and gave them over to the Philistines and said, "This is a sign," named the place Beersheba. "This is a sign of our peace, and that I have no claims on you, and you have no claims on me." Avram, what are you doing? This is part of Israel. This is Beersheba. This is Israel. This is the land God already promised you. What are you doing? You're giving up. And this is the famous Tanchuma that the Rashbam cites.
Perish on the
Torah. No, gracious God. It says, "Amalei Kodesh Baruch." Now let's read together. See it? Source 11. You gave over 7 sheep. I am going to hold back on your joy for seven generations. What's that? You see what this Baal Medrash is saying that Avram should have gotten?
Or saying 7 generations until we actually inherited the land.
Or, I can see that interpretation, but...
What is it? There's maybe cross.
How much is not cross? Okay.
Why should they even inherit the land? It's
not inherit the land. What's the gift we're talking about?
The Torah, I guess.
Torah, yeah. In other words, Avram, you should have gotten the Torah. But because you gave over these 7 sheep, I'm keeping you waiting 7 generations until the Torah. Amazing. This is what the Joshua do. They take ironies and then send it. Right? Okay? So because you... I mean, this is given up to interpretation. The Medrash doesn't say this explicitly. There are perushim to Medrash Rabbah that say this. Okay? Next, it says, "Chayecha kineged kain ben kain heim morgim nibanecha zayin tzadikim." Because you gave over 7 sheep to the Philistines, they are going to kill 7 of your descendants. Who are they? Binan. Hophni, Pinchas, Shimshon, Shaul, and Shaul's three sons. Remember who these guys are? Hophni and Pinchas were Eli's two sons, right? Shimshon. Although they didn't really kill him, he took down the temple. You know, killed Tamos Nafshi and pushed him. Alright, but still, he's in there. They brought him to the temple. And then Shaul 4, and his three sons, they're set.
Well, Shaul also killed himself.
Yeah. Alright, I guess when you kill yourself because you're afraid that someone else is about to kill you, it's like they killed you. Atoma Satalo, another one. Zion Kosos, Kenegit Kane, Bonov, Machrivin, Mibonecho, Zion Mishkanos. This one's crazy. Plishtim certainly did not destroy seven Mishkans. Elohim, Olamoid, Gilgal, Nov, Givon, Shiloh, and Yerushalayim twice.
So any place the Mishkan recently was, they destroyed like a retroactive destruction of the recent.
Yeah, they destroyed Shiloh, but he's saying they destroyed all seven.
Even if they did destroy seven, the Mishkan wasn't there every time they destroyed it.
Yeah, well, the Mishkan stood in seven different places.
Right. And it was transferred. It wasn't because it was destroyed, therefore it was transferred to Sifat.
Yeah, okay. And then he finally says that when the Plishtim took the Aron, let's say, beginning of Sefer Shmuel, they kept it for 7 months. That's what's written in the Tanakh. There's the seven again. The Plishtim with the number seven is way out there. And that's what the Midrashim do. Okay? But it all stems from Abraham making a pact with the Plishtim. What was so bad about that pact? Answer?
I promised this land to you.
You gave up part of it? It was the Plishtim? This was mentioned, a member of the Oslo Accords in 1993. This was a big, big deal. You know, all about whether we could give up land.
Okay? So he says, I'm telling you that this is your land and you just readily give it up to the Plishtim for some kind of security? Why aren't you relying on me? Okay, Chayecha, all these sevens are going to remind you that you did something wrong. So comes the Rashbam to say that that's the next story. You want to give up a piece of the land? How many of your descendants are going to die defending that land? Why don't you give up your son to it? See how easy it is. Give up land, you have your son, same thing. How? What? You lying? It's Rashbam. I would sooner. I know what he's trying to do. He's trying to resolve the philosophical problem of God testing a man this way. If he doesn't need him to come to that truth.
So then it should be not give up land, you think? Because sort of similar like this.
I would say, you know, I can see both ways. Abram still did it. Because, you know, Abram said, look, I need peace now. What this means for the future, maybe this is why we have to behave this way, because Abram did it back then.
Right.
For the time being, you know. But you can argue that the highest ideal within Judaism is human life, not a piece of land. Giving up this land temporarily is going to enhance human life and save lives. Rav Soloveitchik said he would give up the Kotel if it would save one Jewish life. The problem is that, at least recently, we've experienced that giving up areas causes more lives to be taken and lost. But the point is not that circumstance, is that human life is more important than a piece of land, or a piece of Kotel, or a piece of anything. Because we're in God's image and nothing else is. Okay. Alright, let's do a few more. Maybe just one more thing. Source number 13. This is amazing. It says, Vayiki Zokein Yitzchak. Right? Yitzchak was old. And he called over Esav to give him the bracha. So this Medrash in Gracious Rav is asking,
How can Yitzchak be so taken up with Esav like this? It says, Vayahav Yitzchak is Esav Kitzayin Befiv. So you probably know the more common Perush of Rashi that says that Esav hunted him and conned him into thinking he was something he wasn't. Right? You have Kitzayin Befiv. Kitzayin Befiv shall Esav. Esav was a hunter with his mouth.
Yes, I questioned.
Right, Rashi says. So then Rashi says another parish. No. Tzai Befiv is so Yitzchak. Yitzchak loved Esav, Kitzai Befiv. It's sort of a short form. He put hunted meat, put game in Yitzchak's mouth. Yitzchak loved Esav because Esav put food on the table. That's a good reason to favor one of them. Why not? It's my job to put food on the table. I'm supposed to sweat. And I'm not really capable of doing that. So if Esav does that for me, I'll favor him. But this source doesn't like the fact that that's why you should favor a son. Right? It's not good enough. Right?
But isn't it? He's showing that Esav is responsible, that he can take care of a household, he can have dependence upon which he can support.
It blinds
him. And allow Yaakov to do his school, his supper part, he's in school.
You talked about that. I would say the following: that what this Medrash is saying is that Yitzchak is blind in that story. You think of what blinds people in the Torah. What makes you blind in the Torah? You're blind if you look at the total eclipse of the sun for too long. You're blind if you look at the Kohanim and things in the Gemara that says you get blind. But what's the one thing that the Torah says a few times? This is Parsha, not less than Parsha, that makes you blind.
Bribes.
Exactly. What blinded Yitzchak? Esav the bribes. He bribed you with his meat. That's what this is saying. Bribed you with his meat. The next source is going to knock you off your chair. We'll have to do that next time. Story number 14, okay?